All right, open your Bibles, Job chapter 1, verse 1. Job chapter 1, verse 1. We'll just read one verse to get started here tonight. Job chapter 1, verse 1. Like I said, one verse here. Job chapter 1, verse 1. It says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil." Now, without a doubt, Job is one of the greatest men to ever live. I remember way back in 1995, I remember reading the book of Job. Actually, it was an NIV Bible. Not that that's an endorsement. That's just a fact of history. I was reading the book of Job in an NIV Bible. And as I was reading through, I got to chapter 2, verse 10. And it says, "But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" And I read that, and I thought, boy, if I ever have a boy, I'm going to name him Job, because that struck me. I mean, I thought, boy, this is a real man here. I thought, this guy, he's tough. I mean, he loses it all, and he just says, "Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" And I look at that, and it still makes, you know, I felt like a crying little girl, and it still makes me feel like a crying little girl. I tell my girls all the time that they cry about stuff, and I get aggravated, and I tell them, I said, "That ain't nothing for you to be crying about." And you know what I need to tell myself is, hey, that ain't nothing for you to be crying about. Just quit your crying, Nancy. Just suck it up. And that's what Job does. And it just struck, the first time I read it, it struck me that this guy is, he's tough. I mean, he's a real man. But back to Job chapter 1, verse 1. It says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil." So in case you missed it, in case you read through there and you didn't catch what God was, you know, intending for you to get, because I think that's what most of people's Bible reading is just missing stuff that's right there. But in case you missed it, when you read through Job chapter 1, verse 1, God repeats it in Job chapter 1, verse 8. He says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" So God says it all over again. He's a perfect and upright man, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. Like I said, he says it in verse 1, and in case you miss it, because just knowing the way you read your Bible, there's a good chance you did miss it, God repeats it for you in verse 8. Now, I'll tell you what most people don't catch. First of all, they don't even catch what the Bible says. And number two, most people have this impression reading the book of Job that Satan mentions Job to God, and it's just the opposite. What you see reading this book here is that God brought up Job to the devil because he was going to use him really to make Satan look like a fool. And God was intending on using Job to bring glory and honor to himself. And here was a man whose outward life was so blameless that God could use him as a challenge to the devil. But it wasn't just his outward life. What you find out is God knew him and God had confidence in him. That's why he mentions him, because he knew who he was and he knew what he could take. I'll show you something. Look at Numbers 31. Numbers chapter 31, verse 20. Numbers chapter 31, verse 20. It says, "And purify all your raiment, and all that is made of skins, and all work of goat's hair, and all things made of wood. And Eleazar the priest said unto the men of war which went to the battle, This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord commanded Moses, only the gold and the silver, the brass, the iron, the tin and the lead, everything that may abide the fire, you shall make it go through the fire, and it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of separation, and all that abideth not the fire, ye shall make go through the water." So here's silver and gold and tin and some of this other stuff that would abide the fire. And God intends for it to be purified, and fire is the instrument of purification. But notice, it's only that that can abide the fire is put in the fire. You know, the idea being is God doesn't waste and ruin, especially human lives. He's not in the wasting business. If something can't make it through the fire, God doesn't put it in the fire. He says if it can't abide the fire, then you wash it with water. The idea being, God doesn't put you through a fire, he doesn't think you can come out. You know, God knows if he puts you through something, it's because he knows you, by his grace, can come through it. And I think that should make sense to people. And you ought to look at this and say, God doesn't waste people's lives. People waste people's lives. You know, again, if you can't make it through the fire, just like here, if something won't abide the fire, God's not going to put it in the fire. And that's what you see in the book of Job, is that God had confidence in Job. He looks at him and he says, I know he can take it. And I think that, wouldn't that be something if God had confidence in you? That really would be something if God had confidence in you. You know, he said about Abraham way back there in Genesis 18, verse 19, he said, I know him. And what he's saying is, I know him, and I know I can trust him. It really would be something if God knew you, and God knew that he could trust you. You know, I'll just tell you, as far as Job goes, and God mentioning Job to the devil, I think people have things really backwards, you know, especially in today's day and age, but probably they always have had things backwards. People have this notion that the measure of a man is what he can dish out. That isn't the measure of a man. And the measure of a man is how much he can take. You know, and that's the measure of Job, is, you know, he doesn't dish out anything, but he takes it and takes it and takes it. And I think in John chapter 19, verse 5, you know, Pilate leads Jesus out, and what he says about him, he says, behold the man. And you know, when he says that, he says, behold the man. And that's, what, you know, after he took all the beating, had the crown of thorns put on his head, and the mocking and slapping and all this, after he just silently took it, Pilate leads him out and says, behold the man. That is a real man. You know, somebody that can just keep taking it, and just persist and march on. I'll tell you, one of the, I guess one of the heartbreaks of my Christian life has been several years ago, I saw a cousin who used to be very dear to me, and he is still very dear to me, but he found out I was a preacher, and I had to sit down and explain to him that I'm not a faggot all of a sudden. And I hated having to tell my cousin I'm not some kind of a faggot. You know, that's what he's used to looking at, I guess, in the quote Christian world. But, you know, really, what you see in the Bible, you know, it says there was a man in the land of Uz, and Job was a man, you know, because he could just take it. And God knew he was a man. He knew he could trust him. He knew whatever the devil would dish out to him, that he'd just take it, you know. So, and I, excuse me. And I heard a preacher, I guess it's been a little while ago, but he was talking about when you shelter your kids, what it really is a subtle form of rejection. What you're saying is you're not smart enough, you're too weak, or you're too stupid, whatever it is. You can't handle this, so I better keep you from it. Or I better take care of this for you, because I don't trust you enough to do it for yourself. You know, I take my girls backpacking once in the spring and once in the fall. And last fall, I almost took Chloe backpacking with us, but I didn't. You know, I figured she was still too small, still a little bit too weak. And what I thought was she couldn't handle it. And I brought Hannah. I subjected Hannah to it because I knew she could endure it. You know, I had confidence in her that she could take it. And this spring when we go out, I'll take Chloe with us, because I think now I have more confidence in her, and I know she can take it this year. So Job chapter 1, you find out what kind of a man Job is. And you find out God has confidence in Job. And I'll just tell you, and I've always thought this, I'm surprised there's not more boys named Job. I just don't know why there's not many more boys named Job. There's a whole lot of Adams out there, not to hurt your feelings if your name is Adam or you name your kids Adam, but you know, Adam, all the trouble you've ever been in is a direct result of Adam. And you almost never meet anybody with the name Job. You know, all we've had is girls. And we're having a baby, and I was telling my folks, we have a boy, we're probably going to name him Job. And my dad said that he thinks that's bad luck. You know, because he had the idea that, you know, the devil went after him. Well, God mentioned, you know, most people overlook that God mentions Job. And then the devil just takes God's bait. But I'll just tell you, to name your boy after somebody that God knew and that God knew he could trust, I don't think that's bad luck. I think that's a good namesake, is to say, I'm going to name my boy after a man that God knew what kind of a man he was and just how much he could take. I think that's a, you know, it's a, like I said, a good namesake, but you just don't hear it very often. Look back to Job chapter 1 again. Job chapter 1, verse 1. Job chapter 1, verse 1, he says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And again, he kind of repeats it in verse 8, and the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Now notice what kind of man God says Job is. He says he's perfect, he's upright, and he fears God, and he eschews evil. That word eschew is to flee from. you know, to shun evil, to avoid evil. It sounds like, you know, we use the word shoo, you know, like get away from me. I don't know if two words are related or not, but they sound like they're related. He eschewed evil. It means he avoided it, shuns it, flees from it, gets away from it, stays away from it. And obviously, how can you be perfect and upright if you don't eschew evil? You know, the two go hand in hand, eschewing evil and being perfect and upright. And I point that out because I think Job's wife gets a lot of bad press. And I think, you know, she deserves some bad press, but I don't think she gets, or she gets more bad press than I think she's entitled to. You know, I point this out, I think Job was more selective in picking out a wife than most of the Christian men you've ever met are. So she gets a lot of, like I said, a lot of bad press. I'll just tell you, if she wasn't a good woman, I don't think Job would have been interested in her. So there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And so I don't think he'd be interested in a bad woman. Something to consider is, even good women have bad days and do bad things and say bad things that later they wish they wouldn't have did and wouldn't have said. You know, for that matter, even good men say and do bad things that later they look back on and say, boy, I wish I wouldn't have said that, I wish I wouldn't have done that, and so on. You know, so even Job, you know, he's the hero of our story. You know what you find out if you read the whole book and actually pay attention to what's being said is that Job says some bad things throughout the book. I'll just show you a couple examples. Look at Job 31. Job 31, verse 4. Job 31, verse 4. He says, doth not he see my ways and count all my steps? If I have walked with vanity, or if my foot hath hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know mine integrity. So the question he's asking here is, has God done right in allowing me to go through all these things I'm going through? And so, see, you know, he's not cursing God, but he's questioning if God is actually doing right in what God is letting happen. Does everybody see that? All right, look at Job 27. Job 27, verse 2. As God liveth, he says, Job 27:2, as God liveth, who hath taken away my judgment, and the Almighty who hath vexed my soul, and all the while my breath is in me, and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. God forbid that I should justify you till I die. I will not remove mine integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. So you see what Job is saying. He says, my lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. He says, my righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. In that same passage, as he's saying, I'm not going to speak wickedness or deceit as long as he can, or as long as he can breathe, he says, or as long as he lives, his heart won't reproach him. But in the same breath, he's accusing God of vexing his soul and refusing to give him a hearing in court. As he said in verse 2, as God liveth, who hath taken away my judgment. And then he says, I'll never say anything bad all my life. You know what I think? I think Job comes pretty close to cursing God. I think he comes about as close as a person can come to cursing God without actually ever cursing God. You know, I think a few times, you know, the devil's sitting and he's watching. I think a few times he says to himself, I got him, I got him. And then Job just falls short of actually cursing God. Now I'll get back to Job's wife in just a little bit here. But as I already said, you know, God is using Job to make the devil look bad. And he's trying to bring honor and glory to himself. At the same time, Satan is trying to use Job to make God look bad. Look at Job chapter 1, verse 9. Job chapter 1, verse 9. It says, then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. You know, the Bible tells you Satan is the accuser of the brethren. Everybody knows that. And here you see him accusing Job. You know, he's there talking to God, accusing Job to God, and what he's accusing him of being is a hireling. You know, Satan is saying is he doesn't serve you because he loves you. He doesn't serve you because of who you are. He just knows which side of the bread is buttered? And I don't know who said it, but somebody said, he that serves God for money will serve the devil for better wages. And that's what the devil's saying. He just serves you because the pay is right. He's saying he's nothing but a cheap hireling. And so God says to him, he says, you go ahead and you test that out and see how it works out. Remember, God says he knows Job and he has confidence in him. Or I should say, we said, you know, God knows Job and he has confidence in him. And what you find out, a lot of Christians, when put through the fire, what they prove to be is hirelings. I'd be surprised if God would mention you to Satan. Because God knows you. He knows if he can or can't trust you. Most people today, God knows them well enough to know I can't trust him or her like I was able to trust Job. And you see a good example of it. Look at Matthew 13. Matthew 13, 21. Matthew 13, 21, he says, yet hath he no root in himself, but dureth for a while, for when tribulation or persecution ariseth, because of the word, by and by he is offended. He also that receives seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. So that's most people right there, is when trials and temptations come, they fall off, and they prove they were just a hireling. They were good, and they were loyal, and all these things, just until, you know, it got uncomfortable and was no longer convenient to be true to the Lord. And Job starts, I mean, the book of Job starts, he tells you who Job is, and then he tells you there's this conversation between God and Satan, and then the fur hits the fan, and the Sabians come, they killed all but one of the servants, took all the oxen and all the asses, and then the fire fell and killed all the sheep, and all the servants are dead except one that gets away to tell Job what happens. And the Chaldeans come and take all the camels away and kill all but one of the servants. The wind smote his son's house and killed all 10 kids inside. And next chapter, another conversation between God and Satan, and then Job is covered in boils. Before anything happens, you're told about this conversation in heaven between God and Satan. So you know that there's a spiritual element behind all these events, and at least in Job's life. All these events in the physical world have a spiritual element and a spiritual reason behind it. You know, most people never give any consideration to the spiritual elements behind the events in the world. You know, if you do consider there's a spiritual element behind what happens in the world, you're considered some kind of a nut or a lunatic. You know, they haul you off to a psychiatrist someday, and you say, yes, doctor, I do believe the devil controls armies and fire and wind, and he can make you sick and cover you in boils, and he controls the government and the economy and churches and public education and all these things. They would lock you up, because they would think you're a nut to think that there's some sort of spiritual element behind what happens in the world. But the fact is, God and the devil are both at work. They're both trying to do or prove something, and poor Job is caught right in the middle of all of it. At the end of the book, what happens, you know, God shows up and he reproves Job, and all his reproofs amount to this. Don't you forget who I am, and don't you forget who you are, and don't you forget your place. And the Lord asked Job a series of questions. Look at him, Job 38, verse 3. Job chapter 38, verse 3. Job 38, 3 says, gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. So God says, gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. Probably about 1995, maybe 96, when I was reading Job in an NIV Bible. I also read another book. Not that I recommend it, not that it's an endorsement. It just happens to be a fact of history. I was reading a book called How to Keep Your Faith, or How to Maintain Your Faith When God Doesn't Make Sense. I think was what the book was called. And the book is, all these things happen to you, and someday God will let you know why all these bad things happen to you. You know, not to lose your faith, because someday you'll meet God, and you'll get to ask God, well, God, why did you do these bad things to me? And God will then explain himself to you. And, you know, since then, I've actually read the Bible, became a Bible believer, and, you know, learned to throw out a lot of this trash, but I don't think that's so. And I've read the whole book of Job several times here, and Job, he's, you know, he's got all these questions he said he liked to ask God, and he liked to know what, you know, and when God finally shows up, Job is the one that gets questioned. God never does tell Job why he did anything. As far as you know, Job never knew what God was doing. You know, and that's what happens to you. I mean, you're going to die and go off to a judgment seat, and you ain't going to get to ask God nothing. It'll be your job just to give an account. What you'll hear is, "Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me." That's what you got coming. And what the questions amount to is, who do you think you are? You know, God's saying, don't you forget, I'm God Almighty. I can do what I want to whoever I want, and I'm still God, I'm still holy, and I'm still righteous. And through these questions, he presents himself to Job as a powerful creator and God over all the universe. And there's also another element to his questioning. Look at Job chapter 38, verse 4. Job chapter 38, verse 4. He says, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare, if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest, or who hath stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened, or who laid the cornerstone thereof? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy, or who shut up the seed with doors when it brake forth, as it had issued out of the womb?" And we'll just skip some of these, look down to verse 18 for time's sake. He says, "Hast thou perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare it if thou knowest it at all. Where is the way where light dwelleth? And as for darkness, where is the place thereof, that thou shouldest take it to the bound thereof, and that thou shouldest know the paths to the house thereof? Knowest thou it, because thou wast then born, or because the number of thy days is great? Hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow, or hast thou seen the treasures of the hail, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? By what way is light parted, which scattereth the east wind upon the earth? Who hath divided a watercourse for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning and thunder, that causeth the rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness wherein there is no man, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth? Hath the rain a father, or who hath begotten the drops of dew, out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it?" And so, see, God asks these questions, and Job says nothing. The big reason being is Job doesn't even understand the questions that are being put to him. You know, for instance, look at verse 24. No one even knew what God was talking about in verse 24. He says, "By what way is the light parted which scattereth the east wind upon the earth?" You know, nobody knew what was even being talked about until Isaac Newton came up and, you know, learned that light was parting. And he says, I still don't think people get the question that God's asking. He says, "By what way is the light parted which scattereth the east wind upon the earth?" I have no idea what light parting has to do with the east wind. I don't know. I don't think anyone has had any connection between light parting and the east wind yet. I've never heard anything about it in any kind of a weather report. I'm going to watch the news tonight. You know, I might be having a snowstorm come through here tonight. You know, kind of get things figured out for tomorrow. And I just know this. I know in the whole weather forecast tonight on the news, no one is ever even going to mention light parting having anything to do with the east wind. Because still today, no one even knows what God is talking about. You know, so what these questions about God's creation amount to, and Job doesn't know. Well, I have no idea what you're talking about. If he did say anything, that would be all he could say. He doesn't know what God's talking about. So what all amounts to is God asked Job a series of questions about the physical world that he lives in, and that he sees, and that he interacts with every day of his life. And he doesn't even know what God is talking about. You know, through most of the book, Job has been saying God is unfair. It's not right that someone like me is having to go through all of this. And God says, "You don't know what you're talking about. You know just a little more than nothing about the physical world you live in and interact with every day of your life. So what do you know about the spiritual realm that you don't see?" He knows nothing. He knows, like I said, next to nothing about the world he interacts with daily. Look at Job 42, verse 1. It says, "Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered there..." Oops, skip the page. "Therefore have I uttered that I understood not things too wonderful for me, which I knew not." The last verse, things I understood, that I understood not things too wonderful for me that I knew not. What he says is, "I didn't know what I was even talking about." And I'll tell you what's just good practice. It's just, you better pray. Something happens and you don't know what God or what Satan is doing behind it all. they may, you know, they may be trying to do something. You don't know if they are or they're not. All you see when troubles come is all you see are Sabians and Chaldeans and fire falling and dead servants and wind knocking the house down and all these things. And you forget there may be some kind of a spiritual element behind it all. And God may be doing something. Satan may be attempting to do something. They both may be trying to do something. And it's just a good idea to pray, even if it's just something that happens. If there's no spiritual element behind it, it's still a good idea for you to pray. You know, it can only help you to get God's blessing on something. You know, the Bible says, without me, you can do what? Nothing. That's good to remember. Without me, you can do nothing. So just a good idea. Whether God's trying to do something, the devil's trying to do something, or you're just having a bad day, you're still better off praying about it and asking God's blessing and asking, you know, for God's grace and mercy to get you through the day. And in the book of Job here, what you see, now this is real history, something that really actually happened. What you see was God was at work and Satan was at work, and both were trying to do something with Job. Now I'll show you. Look at Matthew chapter 12, verse 30. God's working, the devil's working. Look at something Jesus says. Matthew chapter 12, verse 30. He says, this is Jesus speaking. He says, he that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad. I'll tell you what that is. That's what you'd call an extremist statement. If I said that, I wouldn't pay any attention to it. But that's an extremist statement made by the Lord Jesus Christ. And it turns out, you know, he is an extremist. You know, you have to go outside of the Bible to have somebody teach you that the word zealous is a bad word. Zealous is a good word in your Bible. He said it's good to be zealously affected. And your Lord, who you're supposed to represent, is a consuming fire. You know, he wants you to be hot or cold. What do you know what lukewarm does to the Lord? Makes him want to spew you out of his mouth. He says, get in or get out. You know, the fact is, you're either lost or you're saved. Your eternal destination is either heaven or hell. And what he says here is, you're either with me or you're against me. He says, you're working with me or you're scattering abroad. He says, he that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad. So in Job, what you find out is God is at work and Satan is at work. And there's a short list of people in the book. There's Job, there's Elihu, Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz. And Job's wife, and her name isn't even given. You know, she has the shortest part in the book. I guess, you know, if you were, you know, you'd call it a minor supporting role is what people call it. But the little part she plays, here's the fact, she's either with God or against God. You know, to be against God is to be with the devil. Remember that. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad. So again, you play your little part. You either play it with God or against God. And the devil, I mean, he's a terrible thing. That's what you find all through the book of Job. Just, you know, all the terrible things the devil loved to do to people. And the only reason he stopped where he did stop was because that's as far as God let him go. You know, if he'd have been able to damn Job's soul and take it to hell and he'd still be torturing, he would be doing it. And he only just leaves one servant alive just to be sure Job knows exactly how bad he's been treating him. And then he leaves Job's wife, takes all 10 of his kids, and leaves his wife. Look back to Job chapter 2. Job chapter 2, verse 9. And said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? She says, curse God and die. And that's her whole part in the book. She says, then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity, curse God and die. What's that, 10 words or 9 words, whatever it is? That's her whole part. And I always thought, you know, like I said, I read this in 1995, you know, and then I since read it in the real Bible after reading it in the NIV Bible, but I always thought, what an odd thing to say. You know, people have you to believe that you have to understand the times and the culture to understand it. And I thought, well, maybe that's why I don't get it. To me, it just always struck me as just something weird to say. Dost thou still retain thine integrity, curse God and die. And then I finally realized one day that that is exactly what the devil wanted him to do, was to curse God. So I realized, who told her to say that weird thing? It's not because you have to understand the times and the culture of her day. She's saying what the devil wanted her to say. She's trying to get her husband to do what the devil wanted him to do. You know, what she's doing is she's doing the devil's work. When I realized that, I said, boy, he took all 10 of her kids, but left that filthy, rotten, you know, snake of a woman for a wife behind to do his work. And then just very recently, I said to myself, hey, wait a minute. Satan knows people pretty well. He's got people pretty much figured out. And what he thought was, this is all I have to do to get him to curse God. Take everything he has, take his children, and then take his health, and surely then he'll curse God. And poor Job, he lost all his sheep, lost all his cattle, his oxen, his camels, servants, all 10 of his kids, in just one day. But then you got to remember, Job wasn't the only one who had to bury all 10 of his kids in one day. Who else's kids were they? His wife's kids. She lost everything that he did. Here's something to think about. This was the worst day of her life. You ever just have a bad day and do something or say something you regretted later? I bet you did. And people often forget what his wife went through. It's always, oh, poor Job this, poor Job that. And I'm not trying to make light of anything Job went through, but his wife went through everything that he went through. I never heard anybody in all my life say, oh, poor Job's wife. You know, if you've read your Bible, what do you find out in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7? Who's the weaker vessel? You know, she's the weaker vessel. And when is she at her most vulnerable point in her life? Right here in Job chapter 2, verse 9. When she says, dost thou still retain thine integrity, curse God and die. You know, like I said, I think if you read through here, I know the devil was certain. He says, Job is just about to curse God, and he always comes short of doing it. But he almost got him. I'm convinced he almost got him. And the devil, you know, so, you know, I think his wife, like I said, I think she gets a lot of bad press. You know what the devil learned a long time ago in the garden? He realized, I get more mileage out of talking to the weaker vessel than I do talking to the stronger vessel. And that's a good warning. You know, when something happens, you better remember, you know, your wife is the weaker vessel, or your helpmeet might be helping your adversary. So when she says, curse God and die, she has no idea whose side she's taking. I don't think she would knowingly help the devil after he killed all 10 of her kids in just one day. But she says that. She says, dost thou still retain thine integrity, curse God and die. And I'll just tell you, she doesn't say that. That's not the counsel of a wife that's been in prayer. What does the Bible say? James chapter 5, verse 13, he says, is any among you afflicted, let him what? Pray. Obviously, she says this before praying about it. She says, curse God and die, and she becomes an unwitting ally of the devil. You know, keep in mind, the devil just killed her 10 kids, and she's unknowingly taking the devil's side. I feel sorry for her. You know, this we see all around today. You know, God's at work, and Satan's at work, and most people, they play a minor role in all. They're taking sides one way or another, either with me or against me. That's what Jesus said, right? So God's working, and the devil's working. You might not be doing much, but whatever little bit you do, you're taking either God's side or you're taking the devil's side. And most people, just like Job's wife, it's a very minor role. The Bible doesn't even tell you what his wife's name is. You know, it isn't worth knowing her name. She just plays a very small part. That's like most Christians. You men ain't worth even knowing your name either. You know, because all you play is a small part. But the small part you do play, whose side are you taking? Either God's side or the devil's side. You know, the fact is you play your small part either with God or against God. You know, if you're not for him, you're against him. That's not what I think. Remember, that's what the Lord said. You're either with me or you're against me. And if you're not helping to advance God's agenda, you're supporting the devil's schemes. And most people are just like Job's wife. They're taking up Satan's cause without even knowing they're doing it. They don't even know, most people, most Christian people even, don't even know that God and Satan are at work, let alone that they're taking sides. Like I said, if they haul you off to a psychiatrist someday, and you told the psychiatrist you think the devil's behind this, you think the devil does that, you think God does this and God said that, you know, they would think you're nuts. Most Christian people, do they think you're nuts if they know that's what you believe? So most Christian people, they're just taking sides without even knowing they're doing it. And Job's wife, she didn't know that she was helping the devil. You know, just something else, look at Job chapter 2, verse 9. I said, this is the only thing she says in the whole book of Job. She says, then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. So there's her few little words she says. Terrible, rotten woman that she is. And then verse 10, But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? So Job tells her, he says, Hey, shut up, you're talking like a fool. You know what she does? She shuts up. She doesn't speak ever again in the whole book. And I bet the devil, here's the fact, I bet the devil has used your mouth to say more than 10 words. You know, today, I'm sure everybody ate breakfast and lunch, and, you know, all these things before church. We're going to have, you know, dinner here a little bit. Even with a full belly and nice clothes on in a heated building, I bet before you go home today, some of you in here, the devil's going to use your mouth to say something you shouldn't. You know, you didn't even bury 10 of your kids this afternoon. You know, as soon as Job tells her to shut up, she does shut up. You know, and in a lot of people here, the devil has used you to say something that you shouldn't have said. And then when someone says to you, hey, shut up, you sound like a fool. You know what a lot of you do? You just still keep at it. What did God do to just stop the 10 words? But you just keep going and going and going. And then you say, ah, that rotten woman that Job's got. Hey, she said nine words or 10 words. I need to count them here. And then she says, shut up, you talk like a fool. And she shut up. I think you can take a lesson from that. Especially if you ever look back and say, you know what, the devil has used me to say something I shouldn't have said. And I have taken the wrong side, unwittingly, unknowingly. But what happens is we just buzz through life and never really think about what God's doing or what the devil's doing. We never stop to think, let alone stop to pray. We just haphazardly take sides without ever thinking about what we're doing or what we're saying. And you know why I ought to pray always without ceasing? Here's a fact of life. No one accidentally takes up God's cause. You accidentally go to work for Satan against God. It's your natural bend to go to work for your natural father. Like I said, Job chapter 1, verse 1, it opens. He says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. That doesn't describe a man that would pick a rattlesnake of a woman for a wife. You know, twice on the first page, you're told he's perfect, upright, feared God, and eschewed evil. I think she was a good woman in the middle of a hard trial. If she wasn't a good woman, I don't think Job would want nothing to do with her. Like I said, a good woman in the middle of a hard trial, and without her realizing it, the devil got her and put her to work for him. She'd have never willingly went to work for the devil after he killed all 10 of her kids in one day. They weren't just Job's kids, they were their kids. He killed both of their kids. And like I said, and she shut up when she was told, shut up, you talk like a fool. And the point being, if you don't watch out, the devil will get you and put you to work for him too. And you see it all the time. Some just ignorant, prayerless Christian, without knowing what he's doing, the devil just sneaks up and says, say this, do that. And without thinking, without praying, they do it. You know, either with God or against God, and without you thinking and praying about it, that's the side you're naturally always going to take, is accidentally go to work for the devil. You never accidentally go to work for God. And I think, you know, like I said, I think Job's wife is just she gets a lot of bad press that she doesn't deserve. And if you're not careful, you'll be just as guilty as she is, I guess. Let's stand and we'll all be dismissed in prayer.